Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Welcome to the Saturday edition of Racing Across America, the Belmont Stakes Day edition. Nice weather outside, hopefully nice weather downstate. I think it's supposed to be. I broke out the seersucker for the first time this season. It's supposed to be some summertime weather, and I thought in honor of the Belmont Stakes. They had some inclement weather yesterday, but I think it's supposed to clear up and be nice down there today. So that's certainly what we're hoping for. Belmont Stakes Day and a great undercard of stakes as well. The last couple of days have been really nice in New York as far as stakes action. So we'll cover Belmont Stakes and more on this morning's programming. Let me tell you, given the early post time of 11:35 at Belmont today, Clubhouse Racebook opens up at 10 a.m. if you want to come down here. All other branches open up at 11. Keep that in mind. The first 100 folks through the door here at the Clubhouse Racebook with a paid admission get a commemorative Belmont Stakes glass, so a little bonus. And also, if you come down this afternoon, I'm going to have the $500 OTB Live bankroll to play on behalf of 20 patrons. So come in, put your name in the hat, 2 o'clock, 20 folks get selected. I'll be playing all afternoon, and the money we accumulate at the end of the day split up amongst the bankroll team. So hopefully we have a fun afternoon. That'll be the game plan. Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. A little bit later on the show, yesterday we taped an interview with Todd Pletcher. Of course, he has 3 in the Belmont Stakes. He also has some runners on the undercard as well. We hit on all of that. We also talked to Jeremy Plonk yesterday. Countdown to the Crown, horseplayernow.com. We've been checking with Jeremy throughout the Triple Crown season and had to do so on Belmont Stakes Day. So those interviews are coming up a little bit later on. But joining us live right now, also wanted to get some opinions from our friend Ellis Starr, the National Racing Analyst for Equibase. Ellis, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Good morning, racing fans, and happy Belmont Stakes Day.
And I asked Jeremy, I'm going to ask you before we get into the Belmont itself, and it plays into the selection I have. I just kind of couldn't get past Essential Quality. I just think at this point in the season, he's still kind of at the top of the class, so I'm going to look for a good performance for him. But I asked Jeremy, if you were putting a three-year-old poll together right now, who would you have on top? Does Essential Quality hold? I just think that nobody has really wrestled control away from him necessarily after the two-year-old season and a good start to the three-year-old season. Who would be at the top of your three-year-old rankings right now?
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, you know, you just had a lot of good stuff coming into the Derby, and then the strangeness and more strangeness, and I'm not just talking about the possibility of a DQ. Essential Quality, yeah, I think so. I mean, we'll certainly see at the end of the day today. It's tough. I really would like to get another couple three-year-old races in. You know, we thought the Peter Pan might be indicative of something and the Preakness, and wow, it's just crazy. Yeah, by default, I have to say Essential Quality, and that's really kind of a sad way to put it.
Yeah, and you said, want to see a few more races, and I said to Jeremy, and folks will see it later, I said, this may be the start, the Belmont, of the summer season that will help define the three-year-olds as we get to Haskell and Travers and those kind of races. All right, before we get to the Belmont, I just wanted to touch on one more thing because you brought it up before before we went on the air. You said you were at Churchill Downs yesterday, and I was doing the handicapping show. And talk about an odd day, 2 no contests down at Churchill yesterday.
Yeah, in my entire life, and also I saw a tweet by Marty McGee and one chart caller I was with, who's been doing races for 20 years, no one's ever seen no contests, at least at a major track for sure. And it was, you know, it was, I will say one thing, the safety rail on the grass performed exactly as it should. That filly that went through the rail ran around, and she was running on the inside because the rail was out 22 feet, and they were concerned she'd come back through, so they stopped the race about halfway. And the other was just a gate malfunction, or it was a horse. It looked to us like the gate popped a little bit. A couple horses popped, and then it was too late, and half the field was affected. But, yeah, I've never seen 2 on a day. I don't think I ever will again.
Yeah, it was very odd, very odd. All right, let's get into a Belmont Stakes. And, again, that's your race of the week. If folks go over to Equibase and check out the featured race of the week, you can do that every week over at Equibase. Ellis concentrates on one stake across the country, and obviously this week it's the Belmont Stakes. And looking at your analysis, I pulled up a replay of the Santa Anita Derby. We're going to watch number 3, Rock Your World, get it done over number 7, Medina Spirit. Dream Shake runs third in here. And if for folks who watch the Belmont Stakes over the years, pace plays into this race. And if Rock Your World can do in the Belmont Stakes what he's doing here in the Santa Anita Derby as they come down the stretch, he could be very interesting. I tilted towards Essential Quality. I put Hot Rod Charlie in the second spot and then Rock Your World in the third spot. I'm taking a little shot against Rombauer. I want him to convince me that that Preakness performance was for real. Your thoughts on the Belmont?
Well, let's start with that. I feel the same way. I think Rombauer, you know, the Preakness Belmont does happen, but he's improving, but I don't see him as a Belmont type, especially with his style from further back. You know, the last 15 years, two or three horses have come from more than about three or four back, most within two or on lead. Starting with the Tower as, you know, a reference point, of course, and many others. Tonalist came from far back, but not a lot. And so you really want tactical speed. And it really is really simple to me. It's either going to be Rock Your World does what he would have done in the Derby, which is make the lead. And for those that didn't see the picture, Joel Rosario's foot came out of the irons for whatever reason, shortly after the start. And it's nanoseconds, but it's, you know, fractions of seconds that the jockey is trying to get his foot back in the iron. He's thinking about that. And at that point, your weight's not forward. You can't push the horse to the lead. And that's it. It's all she wrote for a horse who had no backup plan. There's no plan B. And so plan A is to go. And, you know, there's really no other horse that might go. I thought for a second, perhaps Overtook adding Blinkers with partial ownership of St. Elias and Known Agenda being owned by St. Elias, a possibility they might make Overtook a little bit of a sacrificial lamb, but the horse never showed any speed. So I think he wants to be in the race, but not to go to the lead. You know, that kind of leads what happens next, which is Essential Quality gets second out of the gate, or Hot Rod Charlie. I think Essential Quality, knowing how aggressive Saez is, gets second. And from there, it's a matter of, okay, does Rock Your World get on that kind of lead you don't pass? Does the breeding for Essential Quality, the fact he's a Tappet, the only Tappet at the race who's produced three winners and a slew. I did a stats race lens query. Tappet's had 13 individual horses win from 12 to 16 furlongs the last 5 years. It doesn't include total list because that query only went back 5 years. And so, you know, the breeding, the stayer is Essential Quality. If he sits second, then he does what he does in the bluegrass. He gets up. And by default, Known Agenda, because I just threw out the Derby. I don't know. There's no excuse. I don't know what's going on. I forget whose name. You can tell me if they named a writer. I think as of last night, they were waiting. But, you know, Rock Your World gets the lead, Essential Quality stalks, and one of the two of them wins with a slight chance Known Agenda gets by on both if they happen to go a little too quickly.
You know, you talked about breeding, you talked about pace and whatnot, but I'll ask, Known Agenda, does the Pletcher factor play into it at all? Because he's won the race three times in the past 20 years, and so he seems to have a little bit of a specialty maybe at a mile and a half, particularly horses getting that break coming out of the Derby going into the Belmont Stakes.
Well, 100%, Seth. I mean, of the three Pletchers, I looked at all three, I tossed the other two, and Known Agenda, of course, was a grade one winner. And with Fletcher's acumen, you know, and particularly when you look at the two of his winners, I remember, Tappert ran sixth in the Derby, now Known Agenda ran ninth. And I think his other one had sprint sixth in the Derby. When he skips the Derby, comes back at the Belmont, he's really dangerous. And 6-1, it might be worth a bet. I mean, if you said maybe he's worth 4-1, 3-1, you're getting six, take a shot. I mean, I'm going to make a win bet on Rock Your World. And if Known Agenda is about six, I'll make about a half as much win bet on him and just key those three in exact box and then throw Ron Barrow and Hot Rod Charlie in, underneath in second and third. And it's probably, you know, a race that I think I'm going to bet a lot less on most people than the rest of the day, but certainly not in pick threes and pick fours because you get down to basically two horses on most tickets.
Yeah, big day like this too. People put a lot of money into those picks. So one of the handful of days during the year that we always say take the rubber band off the bankroll and take some shots because yep. There'll be some opportunities to get yep. some payoffs. And let's look a little earlier on the card and get some more opinions. Let's look back at the Manhattan grade one event, race right before the Belmont Stakes. They're on the grass, $750,000 up for grabs. I'm interested to hear your opinion. I talked to Todd Pletcher, as I said, we'll have that coming up, and I asked him about Colonel Liam, and I said, I have to be honest, as a handicapper, I just haven't believed in him so far, but man, he's got a will to win, so he beats me every time. I'm taking a shot against him again. I'm going to pull up the replay. Keeneland Allowance race from the middle of April. The number one Masterpiece will be the winner. The Chad Brown horse is attracting my attention. I have Colonel Liam right underneath. Rock Emperor is interesting to me. But as I say, really intrigued to hear what your thoughts are on the Manhattan.
Well, for pick threes, pick fours, I'm going five deep. And I guess, you know, we're on the same page. Masterpiece is my top pick. If you look at all the Browns, we'll do it. I'm going to use him. I'm going to use Channel Cat. I'll get him in a second as to why. I'm going to use Gufo. I'm going to use Curtaline. I'm going to use Domestic Spending. But when you think about, you know, Brown, I mean, Chad enters horses that he thinks fit. And when you look at him, you have to really think in his mind, they all got a shot. And you look at a horse like Masterpiece, who reeled off four straight wins, one of the biggest races in South America, the Group 2 mile and a quarter classical coronation in a field of 8, third in a field of 16, did really nothing wrong, had to get his feet wet in October, but then came back in April as a new 5-year-old, and man, that was a heck of a race. Castellano gets on because Rosario gets on Gufo, which is, well, I'll get back to him in a sec, but, you know, it's Brown, it's a horse that's basically second layoff, is a Group 1 winner overseas, whether it's Europe or South America, got a big shot. And Channel Cat's interesting. I mean, it's just the odds intrigued me, 12-1. You know, he's cutting back from 11 furlongs winning the Man of War to 10. He's over 3 at 10, but I look at those 10 furlong races, they didn't mean anything to me. And his last two have been just really good. I mean, as a 6-year-old, you never expect the horse to come back off a little layoff and run two bang-up races, the second to say the word and then the win in the Man of War. I'm not going to get beat by this horse. Gufo, that race to Channel Cat, if I'm going to use Channel Cat, I got to use him. This is where Rosario goes again over Brown and makes sense. He's a Grade 1 winner. He won the Belmont Derby at the Trip last October. I can't knock him. And then, obviously, the two horses that dead heated in the Turf Classic, Domestic Spending and Colonel Liam. I mean, it certainly wouldn't be surprised either of them won. As far as figures goes, as far as everything else, they're not standouts. But on the other hand, they are 11 for 14 combined, so they love to win races.
To me, it's a really intriguing race. I could point to, you know, 5 or 6 in here and have the equal level of confidence. So really looking forward to that one. And it certainly has the opportunity to add a little juice to pick place. Let's go a little earlier on the card. This is a race to me that year in and year out, the Jiper is really intriguing. And now I appreciate the Grade 1 next to it now. And I will say, I mentioned, I think, earlier on the handicapping show, it also is worth paying attention to because it plays into some of the turf stakes that come up at Saratoga, it seems like, every year. I'm going to pull up a replay from the Elusive Quality going back to April 24th. Our friend Lee Einsiedler and his Casa Creed get it done, the number 3 horse. I tilted in that direction, not with a lot of confidence. This is another race that I think is kind of wide open in here. Bound for Nowhere from Wesley Ward is clearly very, very intriguing. Will take a lot of action. And I did use Got Stormy in my mix. I'm not quite sure. That seasonal debut was pretty good. Last time, maybe not so much. I find the cutback interesting. The picking this spot, Mark Cassie, I think it's a little bit intriguing. So there's the directions I'm going. But as you may get from the way I'm talking, I am not jumping in with a lot of confidence. What are your thoughts on the Jiper?
I like this race a lot on my full card selections, which is available at most of the ADW sites. I went 5 deep on kind of my B, but I'm keying on 2. So let me real quick talk about God Stormy. You know, when she cut back last year from the 4-star Dave to the Ladies Sprint Kentucky Downs, she won. So I like the cutback. Her last race was pretty quizzical, though. Sambaye on the outside, I mean, 2 big finishes in a row. Flavian Pratt, certainly a turf sprinter of top nature. Got to use that a little bit, definitely in exotics. And the 4 Fast Boat coming off that win at Churchill on Derby weekend in the turf sprint. But I think for win contenders, for me, it's a 2-horse race. I'm using Bound for Nowhere. Don't need talking up much. I mean, just shows up every time. The Shakertown, 3 years in a row, loves these layoffs. I'd really rather be off for 6 or 9 months than just a couple because yeah. He likes the longer ones. But you know, he shows up. And the Shaker Challenge really showed what an athletic horse he is, because it's the first time he didn't get early position. And Rosario didn't panic. He didn't panic. And he just showed his instinct. He wanted to win that race. And that finish was unbelievable from sixth to first, flying down the middle. The horse I really like as a prize here, and the horse that is my co-top pick, is Gregorian Chant. I just love his current form. I mean, he was a router most of his career, didn't do much. He ran some of the three-year-old stakes back in 2019. He won an allowance race last year. And then, don't know what happened. They put him in a sprint back in January. And he's won three in a row, all turf sprints. He won the Grade 3 San Simeon. His classified allowance at Santa Anita was against Bombard, who came back to run huge, as we all know. Is it last week, I think? Luis Saez gets on, leaves California with a couple of nice workouts. He's 10-1. So win bet for me and Gregorian Chant. I'm King Gregorian Chant and Bound for Nowhere over those two, plus the other three I mentioned, God Stormy, Sambaye, and Fast Boat, 2x5, probably 2x5x5 and Trifecta. And again, a couple of tickets using all five, but mostly my gimmicks, my pick threes, pick fours are all going to be with the six and the eight. And I hope Gregorian can't. His last race, by the way, earned a 1.17 Echo Bay speed figure. To put in perspective, you'd have to go back to Bound for Nowhere's 2018 Shaker Town to get a 1.17. He runs about 1.13. There's nobody else as fast as Brian Chant. He also, just to mention, I look at both, he got a big buyer too at 98, and the only faster horse in the race was Fast Boat. Actually, Fast Boat was the same, Bound for Nowhere was faster, so you're getting 10-1 on a horse that looks just as fast as the rest here.
Yeah, I had Gregorian Chant down at the bottom in the fourth slot for me, and I agree at the morning line price. Very interesting. I think it's a fun card, a really fun card, top to bottom. You know, I think Jeremy Plunkett said it, or maybe Brian on the handicapping show, kind of a mini mid-year Breeders' Cup with all different divisions being covered in here, highlighted by the third leg of the Triple Crown, which, as I say, may kick off a defining summer season for the three-year-olds. We'll see. But Ellis, really appreciate the visit and the opinions, and of course, we'll talk again.
Thanks a lot, Seth. Good luck, everybody, today.
Appreciate it. Ellis Starr, National Racing Analyst from Equibase. Taped these two interviews yesterday, so I know how it's going to time out. So we'll head right into the Todd Pletcher interview, and we'll take a break after that and then go into Jeremy Plonk. And I will mention Jeremy Plonk. He mentions it on there. He was FaceTiming or Zooming us with his iPhone, and he kept getting some calls. So you see the iPhone symbol come up a couple of times, but eventually people stopped calling him, I guess, and it clears up. But as it's fine, but I just mention it because you'll see it at the beginning of the interview. But we'll kick things off with Todd Pletcher. Again, he has three in the Belmont Stakes. He has Dr. Post on the undercard, Colonel Liam, some other horses as well, but we hit on those two. Got some updates also. I thought Sainthood last week looked very good. It was an off-the-turf race, but I thought that was an impressive performance. Got an update on where he may be headed. And just a little update also on the three-year-old filly, the Kentucky Oaks winner, Malathat. So up next, trainer Todd Pletcher. All right, I'm taping for tomorrow. Book opens up in, what, about 40 minutes at 10 a.m., first 100 folks through the door will get, with a paid admission, get a commemorative Belmont Stakes glass. And don't forget that there is the bankroll today here at the Clubhouse Racebook. I am now being told we are ready. So now, up next, trainer Todd Pletcher. Joined now by trainer Todd Pletcher. He has three in the Belmont Stakes, a number of horses on the undercard as well. Todd, good morning.
Morning.
Before I get to the Belmont Stakes and Belmont Stakes Day, I want to go back, offer my congratulations on your election to the Hall of Fame. Well deserved. I'm just curious, how do you find out? How do they get in touch with you and tell you you are now a Hall of Famer?
Well, it's actually probably like you've seen some footage of some professional athletes and such, where you get a phone call from the Hall of Fame itself, and tell you congratulations. You've been inducted into the Hall of Fame. So it was a pretty cool moment, and it was a great feeling.
Yeah, talk a little bit about the feeling and what it means to, you know, make that your life's work and your profession and eventually, essentially, reach the pinnacle of getting into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I think it really hit home probably when I called my mom to tell her, and she just burst out into tears, and, you know, so just kind of, you know, so appreciative of all the good fortune that we've had, and we've just been blessed to have not only some great horses, but great owners and great friends, and, you know, a tremendous staff that contributed so much to it.
Have you worked on the speech at all?
I haven't written anything down yet. Of course, you know, these kind of moments give you some time to reflect and make some notes. You know, it's one of those situations that would literally be impossible to thank everyone who deserves to be thanked. So, you know, you try to hopefully get to tell the people in person, you know, how much they've contributed to it, and then keep it in broader terms in the speech, I suppose.
And is it, with your record up at Saratoga, is it extra special, the Hall of Fame being up in Saratoga and having it take place during the Saratoga season?
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, I think, you know, that the Hall of Fame is rightfully located right across the street from Saratoga. That's where so many good things in racing happen. And, you know, Saratoga's been great to us. One of the things I learned early on, you know, when I first started working for Wayne Lucas in '89, would have been my first summer at Saratoga. It was obvious to me that that's the place you need to excel.
And again, congratulations, well deserved. Before we get on to Belmont, I wanted one more Saratoga question because I haven't had a chance to talk to anybody yet. I'm wondering, have you been up to Saratoga, worked horses over the Oklahoma, and if so, any opinions on the refurbished training track?
Well, we've done limited training because it just opened, but you know, it's to me it's a much needed improvement to renovate it, get new safety rail up, and really what was really important is widening the track. And you know, as you know, the training up there in the spring has become increasingly popular. The large volume of horses, that extra 12 to 15 feet really makes a big difference for safety purposes. And you know, I think once the surface settles in, it's a great addition.
Yeah, it seems like that was the consensus leading in. It was a much needed kind of a move. Be interesting to see how it plays out over the summer. Let's get into it. Belmont Stakes. You have three horses going on Saturday afternoon. Let's start things out with Known Agenda. Pulled up a little workout from the other day. We have some video. He's inside Dr. Post, and they wind up chasing another duo as they come towards the wire here. Talk a little bit about Known Agenda, how he came out of the Kentucky Derby, and how he's training up to the Belmont Stakes on Saturday.
Yeah, he's training great. I'm really pleased with the way he bounced out of the Derby. He's shown good energy since then. He's had three good breezes, and you know, everything's gone according to plan. I think we've always felt like the mile and a half would suit him, but so we're excited about the opportunity to give it a try. But happy with the way he's doing.
We also have a little video of both Overtook and Bourbonic working out. Overtook will be on the outside. Again, this is from just about a week ago or so. Talk a little bit about this duo, how they're coming into the Belmont Stakes.
Yeah, they're similar running styles. You know, they're both horses that want to settle early and make one run. I like the way they're both bred for the race, with a Overtook being a curling out of an AP Indy mare, and then you've got Bernardini, a son of AP Indy, the sire of Bourbonic, and he's out of a Sweet Alex mare. So there's a lot of Belmont history in that pedigree, and you know, I always think that helps in these type of races when you're going a mile and a half.
And you've had plenty of success. You've won the Belmont Stakes three times, and it's a little bit different, obviously, being the mile and a half, a distance that a lot of these horses may not ever go again. Talk about how you approach the Belmont Stakes with your horses. You've mentioned the breeding already. How important is it picking out the right horses as far as breeding? And do you train any differently going into a mile and a half race?
Well, you're going to look to do a little more going into a mile and a half race, but you know, in these horses' cases, they're pretty fit horses. They've had good prep races for it, and you know, the one thing we do try to do is train them on the main track as much as we can and get them used to going around that mile and a half oval. It's just a, you know, it's a different layout than anywhere else. And, you know, when you're going around the clubhouse turn, you've got a mile and a quarter to go, and then when you turn up the backside, you still got a mile to go. So I think not only do the jockeys have to be familiar with that and just kind of know when to make their move, but I think the horses becoming familiar with it helps also.
And again, how does the breeding play into picking out who you decide goes and maybe who passes?
Well, I think, you know, part of it's the pedigree, part of it's the horses' running style and personality, and you know, you certainly don't want a horse that's real headstrong. You want one that's gonna settle a little bit, relax, and rate kindly. But you know, it can also be a tricky race because you would think closers would do especially well, but if there's not a pace on, it can work against them. So I think what's really important to all three of our horses is a good strong pace, and hopefully, you know, I think at least three of the major contenders have to be aware of one another, and hopefully not going to let one sneak away from the other, which would at least keep the fractions honest for our three horses.
I want to go back and get some thoughts also a little bit earlier in the day. And in the Manhattan, you have Colonel Liam. And I talked about it on that handicapping show a little earlier. Colonel Liam has been a horse, I have to admit, as a handicapper, I've kind of gone in a different direction from Colonel Liam all year long, and he's beat me all year long, and it just seems like he steps up and gets it done. Talk a little bit about Colonel Liam, and is there a mental attitude, is there a will to win from Colonel Liam that gets him to the finish line, particularly, you know, last time that dead heat down at Churchill seemed to indicate that.
Yeah, no, he's a really nice horse, and I think he's gotten better and better as he's matured, and he's got that natural desire to win. But yeah, he's just a, you know, really talented colt that has tactical speed and the ability to finish. And so he's really taken to the grass, but he's also trained much better on the dirt this year as well. So I think he's just improved overall. He's just a bigger, stronger physical than he was as a young horse. He's always been kind of a big colt, a lot of unbridled song about him. And I think, you know, as he's kind of filled out into that frame, he's just gotten better and better.
I'll also ask, given the situation with Irad Ortiz this week, have you come up with a jockey?
We haven't firmed anything up yet. We're going to kind of make sure everybody's, you know, on schedule and discuss all our options, and we'll make a final decision after that.
Very good. Also wanted to talk about Dr. Post and the Met Mile coming out of the Westchester last time. I'm a buyer's guy, and he clearly threw the best buyer of his life with the 104 last time in the Westchester. And I'm always curious, lightly raced four-year-old, is Dr. Post better now as a four-year-old?
I think he is. I mean, I loved the last race. It was kind of a perfect prep for this. He was able to kind of, even though it wasn't your typical one-turn mile, the fractions were a little bit slow. He had to keep Mr. Buff honest early on in the race, and he was able to do that and continue to finish it out. So, hopefully takes another step forward in here. But he's a horse we've always thought a lot of, and, you know, he flirted with some big wins last year. He's quality second to Tisdale, the Belmonts. I think ran a better than look third in the Haskell to the, you know, Authentic. He ends up winning the Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic. So he's held very good form, and I think he's set to have his best season yet.
Yeah, certainly off of that Westchester, he looks very interesting on Saturday. I just wanted, before we let you go, touch on a couple other horses, and I wanted to go back to last week. I know it was an off-the-turf event, but in the Pennine Ridge, I like Sainthood a couple starts back in that Jeff Ruby at 10-1, and I thought he was best that day. You know, the subsequent start in the Kentucky Derby, a little bit disappointing. But in the off-the-turf Pennine Ridge, we're going to watch the stretch run here. Gets passed and comes back. I thought this was a big performance from Sainthood. What were your thoughts after the Pennine Ridge? And I'm just curious, where do you point Sainthood next? Are you still going to try the turf with him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think he's one of those rare horses that can kind of run on every surface. And, you know, he's had success on the dirt and the synthetic. you count a good quality second and the Jeff Ruby as a success. But I really liked his two turf works as we were leading up to what we thought was going to be his turf debut. When it came off, you know, obviously with the company's been holding, it was a no-brainer to run him on the dirt. But things go well. We'd like to try the Belmont Derby and get him on the grass. And we trained his sire, Imshawish, who also was pretty talented on multiple surfaces. So it looks like this colt's inherited that.
Very good. And finally, just a little update on Malathat. Is the game plan with her? She's looked spectacular. The win in the Kentucky Oaks, very impressive. But Malathat, still the game plan, the two big races up at Saratoga?
Yeah, that's what we plan. You know, we kind of flirted with the idea of running into Belmont, but she was a little bit light after the Oaks, and we felt like giving her a little more space made sense. And, you know, she got a freshening after the Demoiselle, and she ran in the Ashland. That's her first prep back, and 4 weeks later won the Kentucky Oaks. So this would kind of be duplicating that, giving her a little bit of a freshening and go to a coaching club in Alabama. That's what we hope to do if everything follows suit.
Looking forward to that. And I'll just get your thoughts also. They're going to have some fans, obviously, in attendance. The Belmont Stakes, they're looking at near full capacity up at Saratoga, which will be great that people get to see those performances, because last summer at Saratoga, there were some great performances, but nobody was there to see them in person. As a trainer, being on track, how important is it to have the fans in attendance and get that kind of feedback?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no place like Saratoga, and, you know, the fans are the greatest there, and you know, certainly missed that last year, so we look forward to getting that back, and, you know, it's such a knowledgeable, enthusiastic fan base there that it was not the same last year, for sure. It was kind of an eerie feeling going to the races and, you know, looking at the empty stands.
Again, Todd, appreciate the time. I know it's a busy weekend, so we appreciate your taking the time. Congratulations again on the Hall of Fame election, and good luck on Saturday.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Trainer Todd Pletcher, again, 3 in the Belmont Stakes on Saturday and a full load on the undercard as well.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Capital Region has some of the most sophisticated horse racing fans in the country. That's why Capital OTB built the Clubhouse Racebook. Here you can wager year-round on the best horse racing from around the world. The Clubhouse also has monthly promotions including live bankrolls, handicapping contests, and so much more. Like sports? Watch your favorite teams on more than 30 screens in Legends Field Sports Grill. Food, sports, and the excitement of championship horse racing only at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Going to be joined now by our friend Jeremy Plonk, horseplayernow.com, Countdown to the Crown, and much more. Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Good to be with you. We're finally here at the end of the line. Belmont Stakes, 22, 23 weeks into this year of counting down all the three-year-olds, and it comes down to this last race.
And we've been checking in with you throughout the season, the Countdown to the Crown package coming out every Friday afternoon. People can go check that out for the latest version, but keeping up with the prep races and the allowance races early on that we're going to play into the prep races, and finally the Triple Crown, and now we're at the last leg, as it were. No Triple Crown on the line this year, but we'll have some discussion on the Belmont Stakes. Before we get to that, I know horseplayernow.com, you've got some info out for folks if they're interested on the Belmont Stakes Day card, which overall is a fabulous card.
Oh, it's as good as anything not called the Breeders' Cup. I mean, it's an outstanding program. the early summer Breeders' Cup edition, if you will. Yeah, we have the Horse Player Now Buzz Report. Brian Spencer and I take a look at the Belmont full card for Friday and Saturday this week, as well as the Santa Anita full card and a national spot play journal as well from Brian. So we've got all the action covered coast to coast, and the Buzz Report. We like to brag on this. We don't up the price on the Triple Crown races. It's something that we feel more people get exposure to the product and to the brand and to play in the races. That's a good thing, and that's what we're all about. So our regular low Saturday $10 price for the Belmont, just as it was for the Derby, Preakness, and any Saturday throughout the course of the year.
HorsePlayerNow.com. Check it out. Worth the look, and get some good ideas for, again, a really great card on Saturday at Belmont, highlighted by the Belmont. Before I get to that, and I'll tie it in with the Belmont, but I wanted some of your review thoughts on the Preakness from 3 weeks back. And I say I'm tying it in because in my selections, I've left Rombauer out of the mix. And we're going to watch the stretch run to the Preakness. And you have to make a decision here. Has Rombauer just gotten this good? His buyer number jumped up significantly, and it's a really nice performance. So has he gotten this good, or was it a little bit of an aberration? I'm kind of going with the latter, but I'm not going to argue somebody going with the former. But give us your thoughts on Rombauer and his performance in the Preakness.
Well, I'm kind of like you in that respect, you know, where I feel like what I saw on video I liked. But now when I move forward to the Belmont Stakes, I'm a little bit cold on him now. Nothing that he's done wrong. It's the old-fashioned racing form comment, prefer others. You know, you remember that from back in the day in the sweep and the different commentaries in the racing form. It's just, look, the Preakness was an outstanding race. The fourth quarter of the Preakness is the fastest I can find in history. You got the hand time race back in 73 with Secretariat that is fastest of all time, of course, for the final time. But even the interior split to that with the hand time version becomes a little bit quirky on, you know, hold the pole and things like that on what the splits were like. But I can find another Preakness in history in the fourth quarter where they went faster. In the fourth quarter, the Preakness is basically the far turn. And that's when, you know, Midnight Bourbon really engaged Medina Spirit. And those two got after it like crazy. Like two horses have never gotten after it on the turn of the Preakness. Because that wasn't an all-time fast track at Pimlico on Saturday. It did turn out to be about the sixth, seventh, eighth fastest race, depending on how you split the fifths and the tenths and the decimals. It was a top 10 speed Preakness. So we know the track was a little faster than what we're used to seeing at Pimlico on the first Saturday of May. But man, I tell you, that fourth quarter was unbelievable. But what it did then was it really set the table for Rombauer. You know, when two horses go that hard at it on the turn, the horse who's sitting third, fourth is in the catbird seat, giving away a couple lengths, not running quite as fast through those splits. And then he just finished and accelerated by him with ease. So, you know, what you saw from Rombauer in the Preakness is probably part major improvement on his part. I think that's for sure. And I think what you also have to consider in there is that the Rombauer race in the Preakness was a partial setup from his style. The racing style really set up for him, and he was able to deliver in that respect.
Yeah, and as I say, I'm shying away from him a little bit, and I'm leaning towards Essential Quality. I'm not leaning towards, I have him on top. And my thought was, going through the prep season, coming out of the two-year-old season, obviously he was the champion. The early prep season, he held his place at the top of the class. And I kind of feel like with his consistency, even with two races under our belts and the Triple Crown, I'm kind of feeling he's still at the top of the class. If you were ranking the three-year-olds right now, who would you have at the top?
I think Essential Quality. Yeah. You know, because he only got beat a length in the Derby, right? If he doesn't get beat that length, he's undisputed on top. Medina Spirit, we can look at what's happened with him, and we can say, look, it's all with an asterisk and a grain of salt, you know? And so I think you put Essential Quality on top for right now. Rombauer's got to do it one more time. You know, really nice race in running down the Philly and the El Camino Real Derby. Really nice race in the Preakness Stakes. If he does it again, obviously he's to the head of the class. I think you put Essential Quality up at number one right now based on what he's done. Horses like Rock Your World and, you know, what we also have with Known Agenda, they both have that possibility of coming back into the situation as well. I apologize. My phone is ringing off the hook as we record this segment, and I think that's what's happening. It's such a busy week here, Belmont week, but so if there's some little glitches in my feet, and you see me reaching like this to the screen, I'm trying to shush everybody else off, Seth, so we can talk some Belmont Stakes here, man.
Zoom is new for all of us. I mean, we only got into it the pandemic year, so we're living with it, but we appreciate seeing you on here during the morning. And yeah, that's why I'm tilting towards essential quality, because I still think he's kind of at the head of the class. But I said it on our handicapping show earlier. I also feel this Belmont Stakes may signal a changing of the guard as we move through the summer. We'll see what essential quality can do. But you said it as well. Some of these have the opportunity to maybe make their way towards the head of the class. And as we get a little bit later on to Haskell, Jim Dandy, Travers, Pennsylvania Derby, those kind of races, things may shake up in a three-year-old class where I don't think anybody's really taken a stranglehold. But I'm tilting towards essential quality. I do think Hot Rod Charlie is going to be interesting out of the third in the Kentucky Derby. And given the way that the mile and a half plays at Belmont, the pace scenario might work out for Rock Your World. And when it got down to Rombauer or Known Agenda, I tilted towards Known Agenda. Those are the horses I'm using. What are your thoughts on the Belmont?
Yeah, look, you've got five really good horses here, right? I mean, you got three that are on the fringes, but you got five that are difficult to separate. You know, down to Known Agenda is probably like the number five contender amongst those. And he's the Florida Derby winner, and he's the horse I picked to win the Kentucky Derby. I like him back. Known Agenda is a really good, strong chance to win this race, but I think the price is going to be dependent on, you know, what the public does. You know, he's got to be 6-7-1 in here, I think, to be reasonable value based on what happened in the Kentucky Derby. But horses for years have bounced back from poor efforts in the Kentucky Derby to run well in the Belmont. I'm hoping that happens again with Known Agenda. Maybe it was the rail and the traffic and everything that shuffled him back a little bit farther than you'd expected him to be there in Louisville. I think he's up closer to the pace. Now, with Irad Ortiz being injured on Thursday at Belmont Park, best wishes for a speedy recovery to him. We don't know who's going to ride Known Agenda until Belmont morning as we record this, Seth. So we'll find out. You know, Mike Smith and Jose Ortiz would seem like the two most likely substitutes, both very capable. And you're not losing much in the saddle going to those two guys, you know, outstanding veterans. But Irad Ortiz is in another league right now. So you would rather have him in your corner than not in the corner. So from a wagering standpoint, though, the public loves to bet Irad. We know that day to day, and your fans know that better than anybody being in New York. So maybe we get that 6-7-1 we're looking for because Irad's not riding. With him aboard, the horse might have drifted down 4-1, 9-2 and been a little bit of an underlay. So Known Agenda for me, the pick, the value play, because I think among those five, he's going to be the best price. And he's the horse I like the most going into the Derby. You know, over the years, I've had Derby horses, Louis Couture's, who bounced back and ran really big, you know, to win the Preakness. We saw horses like Taprit in recent years, Commendable, horses who did not run well in the Kentucky Derby, Creator, and then come back and win the Belmont Stakes with a rebound. So there's history behind the fact that if you just run a stinker in the Derby, that doesn't mean your season's over, and you certainly can bounce back by the time the Belmont Stakes comes around. So that's kind of the hope. But I really do think Essential Quality is the horse to beat. He's the most likely winner. And he's going to be difficult if he handles the mile and a half. You know, he's by Tappet, and Tappet's sired, what, three Belmont winners in the last 6 years and a runner-up and a third-place finisher. And so the sire line certainly is there for the pedigree on Essential Quality. But the damn side of the pedigree by Elusive Quality, you think a little bit shorter distance. The one thing I've got a concern with Essential Quality is he was last year's two-year-old champion, and we haven't seen horses stay that good from two all the way through the Belmont very often. You know, you've got to go back a bit. You know, your easy goers and horses like that were able to do it. But they're few and far between over the last 20, 30 years who were able to be championship level two-year-olds and then stay good all the way through the Belmont Stakes in that mile and a half. So it'll be a testament to Brad Cox if he can keep Essential Quality at that peak level for as long as he has, with really no blips in the radar. He ran a winning race in the Kentucky Derby. He just got beat a length and gave away ground to the others, and some of the speed didn't come back to him that day. So, you know, he certainly did not regress in the Kentucky Derby. If you're looking for, like, the shine to come off the apple of Essential Quality, we haven't seen it yet, but this mile and a half can bring it out of a lot of horses.
Yeah, and I will ask, because you already alluded to it, historical trends, and I know you put a lot of historical trends in the countdown to the crown package and whatnot. And so I'll ask on Known Agenda, does the Todd Pletcher factor play into it? I interviewed Todd for this morning's show, and he's won three Belmont Stakes in the past, some with these horses getting that break from the Derby to the Belmont. So did Todd Pletcher play into the thinking?
Yes, he did. And also the fact that Pletcher's three-year-olds have been absolutely outstanding across the U.S. since about mid-March this year. We've chronicled it in the past in Countdown, and I believe on your show as well. You know, he went into a rut 2019, 2020, not really putting anything on the trail with any real success. And the beginning of 2021 was looking the same way until about March hit. And then all of his three-year-olds have run exceptionally well, all except the Kentucky Derby, right? His horses all laid an egg in the Derby race itself, but he won the filly race, the Oaks, with Malathot the same weekend. He's gone on to win the Peter Pan since then, and he's not even coming back with the Peter Pan winner. He's coming back with the Peter Pan third-place finisher in the Belmont Stakes. So his barn has not slowed down with the outstanding performance of his three-year-olds going on the last 3 months now. So that was definitely a factor. His success in the Belmont Stakes. Irad Ortiz was a factor, too. I'll say that. You know, look, I think a lot of public handicappers are afraid to admit that jockeys sometimes influence their decision because it means you're a remedial handicapper if you're just betting the best jockeys on the board. You know, we kind of look down our nose at people who bet Julian Leperoux at Keeneland, and if you're betting Flavian Pratt in California and, you know, Dominguez in his heyday or Bailey, oh, you're just a chalk eater and you play the top jockey all the time. They're good. The top guys are good, and I think you need to admit that. And I think Irad Ortiz is worth a couple lengths at Belmont Park and in New York and the way he's riding now. So without Irad Ortiz, it certainly softens a little bit the confidence you have in Known Agenda. But again, the substitute rider probably going to be either Jose Ortiz or Mike Smith, and we know that we may know that by the time this show airs. And so you're going to get a good rider, but Irad's worth a couple lengths over a mile and a half at Belmont Park. And that factors into it as well. I'm not afraid to admit it. I mean, look, jockeys are great. They also are kind of like gymnasts, you know. You start off with a perfect 10, and every mistake you make starts to tick away at your score. A great perfect ride by a jockey can get any horse to the winner's circle who's the best horse in the race. It's the mistakes that add up, the decisions that add up, that start to, you know, take away from the best horse in the race maybe winning all the time. But when you get the best jockey on one of the best horses in the race, it's worth something. And Irad would have been a definite benefit to Known Agenda. But that did factor into my decision. Pletcher for sure, and Irad as well.
Yeah, years ago in his heyday, I had listed my picks for Saratoga on the Echo Daily website, and I was over on one of the horse racing boards that were popular then, and somebody said, you have Bailey on seven of the winners. And I sent back a message. I said, yeah, he's probably not going to win seven on one day, but which ones do I take out of that mix? Yeah. So their jockeys certainly have to play into your handicapping at that level. And when a guy like Irad is just rolling as well as he is. So we're looking forward to him to come back. And again, in the Pletcher interview, as far as when we talked on Friday, he had not yet made a decision as to who's going to be on board. So it'll be interesting. Talk a little bit about the two Southern California horses who I have second and third. I think Hot Rod Charlie coming out of the third in the Kentucky Derby. But again, pace scenario for Rock Your World, I think, is going to be really intriguing.
Well, for sure. I mean, the pace is the whole key with Rock Your World. Let's start with him first off. He could get the same kind of lead that he got in the Santa Anita Derby, and maybe even less contested than it was in the Santa Anita Derby. And if that's the case, he'll take him as far as he can. Can he run a mile and a half off of his foundation and with a 59 work coming into this for five furlongs? He's being trained for speed. Whether that speed will carry that far or not, I don't know. He's certainly a threat to win the race. Would I bet my hard-earned on Rock Your World to win the race? I don't think so. But when I'm playing a pick four or a pick five, I'm trying to view scenarios of how the race could play out. And there is definitely one scenario in which Rock Your World gets an easy lead. He's as good as he looked at Santa Anita, and he goes on with it. If you're playing a pick four or a pick five, I think he's among the horses you use on the win end in this race, because I don't think it's a race where you're only going to take one. Unless you love essential quality, you single essential quality, and you move on with it, and you don't mess around watering your ticket down. But I think Rock Your World's scenario is he could go wire to wire in this race, or he's probably going to finish a little bit up the track. You know, I don't think he's going to run a good second or a good third in here. But he's a horse you want to consider on the win end. His workout looked really good. If this race was a mile and an eighth, if this was last year's Belmont, the one turn mile and an eighth, he's the horse to beat. But it's a different game going a mile and a half around two turns. There's a lot of turns involved. There's a couple lead changes that have to go involved. And for speed horses, that can sometimes, you know, take a toll on him. So Rock Your World is really pace dependent on here, and we'll see if he can go the distance. As for the other Southern California horse, Hot Rod Charlie, he's a bit tougher read because on paper, he looks like a real contender, right? His Kentucky Derby, he was right there on the wire. He looked like the winner in the upper stretch. I really thought he was going to go on and win the race in Louisville when they turned for home. He's a major contender. My question with him is, why the 5 weeks? Why was he not back at Pimlico? You know, Doug O'Neill is a trainer who is revered in Baltimore. He does all the media stops. They love him at Pimlico. He's gone there with the Kentucky Derby winner a couple times. I'll have another, and Nyquist. And he loves the Baltimore scene, and they've done well at Pimlico. And with Baffert's horse uncertain to even race at Pimlico, I was just surprised that they just said, we're pulling up anchor, we're going back to California, and we'll see everybody in 5 weeks. That just doesn't seem right to me for a horse like that. He should have been in Baltimore. And so that he wasn't, you start to say, does he need more time between races? Does he need a little bit to help overcome the hard effort in Louisville? And does he need that little bit of time to get things through his system for the recovery? And so that's what I'm kind of concerned with Rock Your World, or not Rock Your World, but Hot Rod Charlie, that he went back to California, he took the 5 weeks, and his workout since then that I've seen was not nearly as impressive as his workout before the Kentucky Derby. I made him a Kentucky Derby contender after seeing his workout. It was that good. It moved me. I thought he had the best workout before the Derby of any horse going into the race, and that moved him up in my eyes. So then I think he's on edge. He runs a good race in Louisville. He should be right back in Baltimore, and he probably would have won the race 2 weeks ago. Just looking at it on paper and thinking about it with handicapping fundamentals. He goes back to California. The workout since wasn't nearly as impressive. I'm not sure which horse we get in the Belmont Stakes. Do I think he's a contender? I do. But there are others that I just feel like maybe better contenders. You know, I think Essential Quality, I like Note Agenda. And I think Rock Your World has a better win chance than Hot Rod Charlie in this particular race. Though Hot Rod Charlie may outfinish him. He might just run that good even Steven race that he always does and runs third, and Rock Your World quits and runs up the track and runs seventh. You know, that's a scenario that absolutely could happen in this race. But if you think of who can win, just on the win end, I think Rock Your World's more dangerous as a win contender than Hot Rod Charlie would be.
Interesting, and it is an interesting field of eight scheduled on Saturday in the Belmont Stakes. Pace will be interesting. Quality will be interesting. I mean, the quality of the contenders, and it'll be interesting to see who wins. And as I say, we're now kind of kicking off that summer season, which I think is, and really over the last few years it has. The summer and fall has kind of defined the three-year-olds a lot over the last few years. I definitely think it will this year because, again, I don't think up through the first two legs of the Triple Crown, I just don't think the three-year-old season has been defining as far as putting two or three on the top. But as we play out over the next couple of months, I do think I'm going to be interested to see what Mandaloon can do. They're aiming for the Haskell and going to try the Pegasus with him. And then, as I say, the Haskell, the Travers, I think we'll start to get maybe a little more definition on the three-year-old scene. But maybe we start on Saturday afternoon.
We could. And look, if Essential Quality wins, he's right back where everybody thought he might have been from the beginning. Then you got a stable mate going to the Haskell. That almost means for sure you're looking at Jim Dandy or Travers for Essential Quality, because they wouldn't run them both in the Haskell. And Mandaloon's probably a more shorter distance horse. After you've won the Belmont Stakes, you don't need to go out and turn back to a mile and an eighth at that point. So it's good news for the folks in Saratoga if you get a nice win out of Essential Quality, because in the Belmont Stakes, because that puts him as the A number one marquee contender then for the Travers in the summer and then on to the Breeders' Cup Classic. So it's all on the table for all of these horses, but I think Essential Quality's got the highest chair going into it, right? I mean, he's kind of already bellied up to the table as, I've been here, I've done it. You beat me once by a length when I had a wide trip. He can really cement himself as the leader of this crop, as continued leader of the crop, because he was at two as well. With the win on Saturday, there's a very good chance it will be. You know, I took Note Agenda again, but I'm trying to get a price. Maybe I'm being a little too cute. Maybe I'm being stubborn, not just taking 2-1 or 9-5 on the best horse. You know, Essential Quality probably is the best horse for this race, and he's going to be very tough to beat. I can say this. I, with no confidence at all, would I toss him out for ticket and say, well, I'm going to try to hit the pick four and not use Essential Quality. I just think that would be a wrong move. You may not like 9-5 to win, but if he's wrapping up your pick four and it's going to pay you $1,000 or $1,500, do not toss him out of just hubris, you know, of, oh, well, I'm not taking the favorite for the sake of the favorite. He looks like the favorite in this race and should be the most likely winner.
Yeah, I agree, and looking forward to it. And Jeremy, as always, as we wrap up this Triple Crown season, I will tip my cap to you. Another great job this year with the Countdown to the Crown package. We've enjoyed talking to you throughout that series. And again, with a lot of great three-year-old races to come during the summer, we'll check in again.
I appreciate it. 16 years in the books for Countdown.
HorsePlayerNow.com, Countdown to the Crown, Jeremy Plock with some thoughts on the Belmont Stakes. Our thanks to Jeremy. Really appreciate it. As I say, it was fun to talk to him, as it is every year through the Triple Crown season. Check out HorsePlayerNow.com, Countdown to the Crown from Jeremy and the folks. Also, appreciate Todd Pletcher taking the time. Again, we taped him yesterday, but obviously a very busy time, so appreciate him taking a few minutes to talk to us. And top of the show, we were joined live by Ellis Starr, the National Racing Analyst for Equibase. Appreciate his participation, too. I'll wrap it up because they're in the pregame show already at NYRA, but I do want to alert you. I pulled it up a couple of minutes ago. Jose Ortiz has been named on Known Agenda, and Colonel Liam will have Luis Saez. Both had been ridden by Irod Ortiz, but again, a couple of days ago, Irod was involved in a spill. He'll be out for a couple of weeks just getting over some bumps and bruises and whatnot. Known Agenda, Jose Ortiz, Colonel Liam, Luis Saez on board. That has been noted. So that gets you kind of up to date. Again, Clubhouse Racebook just about to open up at 10 o'clock. Early post time at Belmont is 11:35. First 100 folks to the door here at the Clubhouse Racebook get a commemorative Belmont Stakes glass. And this afternoon here at the Racebook, we will have an OTB Live bankroll. Come on down and enjoy all the Belmont Stakes Day action and take advantage of maybe getting some extra money with the bankroll. We'll open up the bankroll team for entry or for the drawing between 11 and 2. You put your name in the hat, 2 o'clock, we'll draw 20 folks out for the bankroll team. And at the end of the day, those 20 folks split up all the money we've made. Hopefully, it's just, you know, we're dishing it out. That's the game plan. But it's always a lot of fun. Belmont Stakes Day here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Again, I'll wrap it up. Anthony and Andy are talking Belmont Stakes Day action, so we'll send it to the pregame show down in New York. Enjoy Belmont Stakes Day. We'll be on throughout the afternoon talking some of the races, and you can follow the bankroll along as we'll be out in the front portion of the Clubhouse Racebook with some cut-ins this afternoon, so tune in for that. Appreciate your tuning in this morning. We'll see you later.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.